Thank you very much, conference, and good afternoon. And good afternoon to old friends who've come today. It's certainly good to see you again. But a very particular welcome to our many new members, because this is the first time conference that I've walked into this room not knowing who to expect, because there's been so many new members in the past year that I haven't yet had the chance to get to know you all. I look forward to doing so, but it's certainly a new experience. And can I just say thank you? You are the Green Surge. I look forward to hearing from you today as we get the opportunity during breaks, etc., to find what it is that led to you joining the Green Party. What was it that led to you taking that step to join this wonderful party, this progressive movement, and these politics of the common good? A special welcome to our colleagues from the Green Party of England and Wales, the Scottish Greens, and the Irish Green Party. We are the Green Party in Northern Ireland, but we share a common cause with friends across these islands, across this continent, and across this planet. I recall a trip to Washington I took in October 2013, and I was actually there with a number of other MLAs, and we went along to a rally and a protest against proposals to lift the cap on election spending. Someone had argued that they should be able to spend as much as they wanted buying elections in America. And there were people out protesting against such a proposal, trying to protect democracy, about the corruption that wealth can bring into the political system. And I went along as an observer. How delighted was I? I was in Washington, across the Atlantic, far away from home, when the leader of the Green Party stood up to speak. And I thought, this is why I'm part of the Green Party, because wherever I go, I know that there will be Greens who are fighting for the common good. I'll like to update you on the work that I've been doing in the Assembly. Hopefully you have been following it, but it has been a great year, I believe, for the achieving the objectives that the Green Party strives for. For 8 years, there has been a campaign to see joined up government in relation to children's services. Too many failures have been made, too many opportunities wasted, and the lives of too many children have been affected by the failure of our government to work together to help them achieve their true potential. In 2010, the Department of Education produced a draft early year strategy 0-6. And when I asked the Department of Education, what work have you done with the Department of Health, I was told this is a Department of Education strategy. That very statement, that single department strategy, was an admission that the draft early years 0-6 strategy started at age 3. That is a failure of governance, and it was a shame to our institutions. And I probably said it at last year's conference, and I probably said it at the conference before that, and I apologise if I sound like a broken record. But you would think they'd learned the lesson. I've had meetings with departments, ministers, etc., on this issue. And only earlier this month, the Special Education Needs Bill was brought forward again by the Department of Education. And I asked again, what input has there been from the Department of Health and indeed the Department of Employment and Learning? And I was told there was consultation. But yet again, this is a Department of Education bill alone. In fact, it was acknowledged in the Assembly that whilst it placed a duty on the Department of Education to work with the Department of Health, that the Minister could not place such a duty on the Minister of Health, because it was not their bill, and one minister can't legislate for another. So again, we have a strategy for children with special education needs that will start at age 3. What about the children with special education needs who haven't reached the education system yet? They are not included in this legislation. And what's more, for those who will transition into adult services, despite a NICE report highlighting the failures of parallel planning between health and education, those transitioning into adult services will be excluded from this bill because it will only affect those within the remit of the Department of Education. These failures, government level, failing all our children in Northern Ireland, I sought to make my number one priority when I was elected to the Assembly. I have produced the Children's Bill, and I'm delighted to say, Conference, that finally, after years of political resistance, the Assembly has agreed in principle to place a statutory duty on all government departments to work together to improve outcomes for children. I believe strongly that this will make a dramatic impact on the lives of children growing up in Northern Ireland. However, more importantly than that, the experts believe so too. The children's sector in Northern Ireland, who've been behind me all the way, and indeed this is their bill, because it was they who campaigned for it, and it was the Green Party who sought to take action to make it a reality. When we launched this bill in Stormont, over 40 children's sector organisations came to the launch to show their support for this bill. The Green Party has listened to their calls, we have taken action, and I hope by the time I speak to you next year, Conference, this bill will become law and the failures of the silo mentality of government departments will have been addressed. When it came to welfare reform, the Green Party has stepped up to the plate. We are the only party who have at every stage of the welfare reform debate have opposed what effectively are the introduction of Tory welfare cuts. While others signed up to a dodgy deal that was created behind closed doors, the Green Party consistently argued that we should debate these issues in full public view, that the electorate should see exactly what agreements were being made and what discussions were being had, and indeed, in the wider negotiations of the Stormont House Agreement, we argued that the public should be included. We were the only party to do so, and we have seen with the unravelling of the Stormont House Agreement exactly why our calls should have been heeded. Through the Assembly processes, we proposed more amendments than any other party, but they were voted down. We were told by Sinn Féin that our amendments were not needed, a deal had been done, the money was there, and that no one would be worse off. In fact, in the middle of the debate in the Assembly, when we broke for ministerial questions, I, along with other MLAs, went and met with the Northwest Disability Forum. And Mickey Brady, a Sinn Féin MLA, told that group, when they asked him, that no one would be worse off as a result of changes made by Stormont. And I don't know why I was surprised, because Sinn Féin had made that claim repeatedly. But I looked around the room and it was that same of the people in person. When we just had a debate where I'd highlighted the figures, made it clear there was a shortfall, that he said that. And I was then asked, well, what do you think? And I said, I could never stand over such a claim. I would love to. But I could not look you in the eye right now and say that I know that you will not be worse off. And I believe no one can make that claim. And I believed, and I still believe, the deal that was done at the Stormont House Agreement never secured that. The numbers never added up. Because before the Stormont House Agreement, we were told by the Social Development Minister, the extra cost to retain welfare at the current level was 115 million per year. NICFA estimated it to be much higher at 250 million a year. In fact, up to that point, Sinn Féin had been on the radio on the Stephen Nolan show arguing it was 560 million a year. And what's worse, the First Minister, Peter Robinson, it was never a figure I thought was credible, said the cost of maintaining welfare could rise to £1 billion per year. And then we hit Christmas, and we did the Stormont House Agreement, and they came back and they told us, no, £94 million a year will be enough to make up the shortfall. The public were being misled. We were also told by Sinn Féin that they had stopped the bedroom tax, and indeed I was accused in the Assembly of debate of scaremongering. And I believe my language was very responsible. I said the bedroom tax was to be phased in, and I asked the Social Development Minister to confirm it, and he confirmed it in the consideration stage debate. And when people questioned me in the media and said, you can't stand over that, I got him to confirm it again at the further consideration stage debate. It was clear that where someone was offered alternative accommodation, if they were deemed to be in over-occupancy, if they turned that offer down, they would be charged the bedroom tax. It wasn't scaremongering, it was a fact, and it was a fact that Sinn Féin only came to terms with when it was clear they couldn't sell it to their own members, because the Green Party had highlighted their feelings. I have no doubt in my mind that had we not exposed Sinn Féin on this issue, that they would have passed the Welfare Reform Bill through the Assembly. And when we signed a petition of concern to stop the welfare cuts, we did not back Sinn Féin. We signed a petition of concern against something we opposed at the start, in the middle, and at the end. And when Sinn Féin came looking for us to sign a petition of concern, they found us where we always were, opposed to welfare cuts. And we've been criticised for our stance, and I certainly make no apologies to anyone, but I'll answer the criticism. David Ford said in his conference speech that this was about votes. This is not about votes. This is about values. And if anybody wants to know the difference between the Green Party and the Alliance Party, David Ford made it very clear for us. David Ford says Northern Ireland cannot afford 200 million to protect the most vulnerable. But in the same breath, he said we must afford 330 million to fund the corporation tax cut. Can we afford 330 million to give a tax cut to multinational corporations? The Green Party says, no, we can't. Can we afford 200 million to protect the most vulnerable in our society? The Green Party says, yes, we can. The Green Party is proud to put public need ahead of corporate greed. And let me be clear. The proposals to cut corporation tax, it's like chasing the crock of gold at the end of the rainbow. But it's fool's gold and the policy's a crock. Another cosy consensus that I've sought to challenge in the Assembly is the programme for government commitment to promote shared education. I'm delighted that the Integrated Education Fund here is here today to hear this speech. Shared is not integrated. Shared is different schools, possibly of different religious denomination, sharing a site. It will see children in different uniforms with different principals going to different schools to be taught a different ethos. They will go on different school trips. We could even see the scenario where one school goes to Longcash Peace Reconciliation Centre and the other one goes to the Mays Peace and Reconciliation Centre. Is that the vision we really want to see for Northern Ireland? Is that the height of our ambition for education in Northern Ireland, where our children are told that not only are you different from those children, you're so different that you have different uniforms, you will be educated in different classrooms, and you will learn a different ethos of education? That is not my vision for Northern Ireland. I want to see truly integrated education, where children are educated together, regardless of religion, race, ability, or socioeconomic background. We should not start our children's journey promoting difference. We should promote togetherness. We had the first conference speech from the Queer Greens today. And can I just absolutely say, I'm delighted that the group has been launched. I'm challenged by your name. But again, I think that shows what the Green Party is about. We challenge society, but we challenge ourselves. And you will know this, but I think it's important to make it clear that you alluded to the Conscience Clause, and I will do everything that I can to ensure that the so-called Conscience Clause will not make its passage through the Assembly. I actually thought we were going to face a difficult challenge. I thought there was going to be a debate about competing rights and about freedoms of expression. It never materialised. What we got was an odious little bill that said that people who were of religious faith could discriminate against people who were gay. That cannot be acceptable in any democracy, in any modern society. It pains me to sit in an assembly chamber where a member can bring forward such a proposal. And I do believe that it will be defeated by the assembly, and I believe rightly so. To restate, we have many new members here today, and I just thought I'd restate the core values of the Green Party, the four founding principles of the Green Party in Northern Ireland. Those are social justice, sustainability, grassroots democracy, and non-violence. And the last of those, non-violence and our commitment to peace, has been called into question by some. The issue of terrorism in Northern Ireland is a sensitive one, and I think it's one we still find hard to get the correct language, and it's inevitably an issue that it's hard to discuss without causing offence to someone. The comments I made on the back of a Natalie Bennett interview, except upset one of our councillors to the extent that she left the party. It also upset some of those who were victims and survivors of terrorism. I have met with victims groups on this issue, and I'm pleased to say that they accepted my explanation and my restatement of this party's commitments to non-violence and opposition to terrorism in whichever community it originated from in our society. And indeed, they put out a press statement to that effect. I apologise to Noel Robinson, who you know left the party, and I again explained and restated the commitment to this party to non-violence. It was a difficult conversation, and again, as you've heard today, efforts are being made by the leader in North Down, sorry, on Ards of North Down Council, Councillor Barry, to ensure that the commitment that Noel gave to return the seat to the party becomes a reality, but preferably that she also comes back with it, and I hope that will be the case. But I think it's important that I apologise to you, conference. I seek to lead this party in the best interest of our society and for the promotion and growth of our party. And on this one, I got it wrong. And I take all your credit and all your applause when I get it right, and I thank you for that. But I think it's incumbent of me to stand up to you today, stand up in front of you today and apologise for getting it wrong on that occasion. I will learn from the experience and will work to ensure that it is a setback in terms of our growth more than anything else. And despite that conference, we head into the Westminster election in a stronger position than we've ever been. The green surge across the UK has seen our membership double since last conference and treble in terms of active members. This is unprecedented growth in the history of our party. And it has a wider significance because the history of politics in Northern Ireland that meant that party loyalty has been held with a ferocity that maybe isn't seen in some other countries. Generations of families all voting for one party are certainly along constitutional lines for generations. To do any different for some would be seen as an act of betrayal. But I've spoken to many new members who have outlined stories of dissatisfaction with the traditional politics of Northern Ireland, and that they've been turned off by the traditional parties. They're excited by the green surge. They're excited by what Caroline Lucas is doing in Westminster, what Patrick Harvey is doing in Holyrood, and they're excited by what we in Northern Ireland are doing in Stormont. They're excited about politics which offers hope, not despair. They're excited by politics which offers reconciliation, not division. And they're excited about politics which offers solutions, not excuses. And they want to work not for one community, but for the common good. And that is why the Green Party is opposed to electoral pacts. Those who say such pacts are not sectarian, I say, then why does your party garner support almost exclusively from those of a single religious background? But even if we leave aside the sectarian nature of such pacts, what does it say about those parties' ambitions for Westminster? Ambitions to the Parliament that sets our tax and spend, that will decide whether this austerity journey agenda continues, which may decide to take an extra $12 billion of cuts out of welfare. What does it say about their priorities heading into that election when they campaign on a single issue, an issue that was settled in the Good Friday Agreement when we agreed to the principle of consent? These parties are admitting they offer little more than a single issue that has already been decided and, in fact, is not in the hands of politicians at Westminster, but is in the hands of the people of Northern Ireland. The Green Party will be standing five candidates in this election. Our deputy leader, Claire Bayliss, in South Belfast. Ross Brown in East Belfast. Tanya Jones in Fermanagh in South Tyrone. Kieran McLean in West Tyrone. And I will be standing for the party in North Down. We will play our part in delivering the largest ever Green vote in a UK general election. We will help make a reality the poll prediction of an 8% Green share. And while the draconian first-past-the-post system will probably mean we won't get the 50 seats that 8% entitles us to, I believe we can build on the excellent result of Caroline Lucas in 2010 in becoming the first ever Green MP. And in Northern Ireland, we will play our part in putting the Green Party at the centre of UK politics. And for the new groups, North Coast Greens, Strangford Greens, Upper Bann and North and West Belfast Greens, the Westminster election may have come too soon for you to stand candidates. But you should be, and I would encourage you to be planning for the Assembly elections in 2016, when we can see. We will have to, as was alluded to in this morning's session, we will have to rework our strategy because we've met our targets that we set for 2016 and beyond. And I invite you to our summer residential to tell us your ambitions for your local party and how we can support you going forward. One MLA is not the height of this party's ambitions. There is too much talent in this room and too little of it in the Assembly. Northern Ireland needs people who will work for the common good. And if not us, then who? Thank you.